You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, June 10th, 2009. This is episode 75, On the Road with Sally. It is that time again for the Wells Tech Podcast, and as usual, I have on the line, this time from a little further out in the country, Sally Draper, and you're somewhere in the South, Mississippi. Is it Natchez?
That's right, Natchez, Mississippi, the newest Wells Technology Satellite Office.
our outpost there. Coming to us via Skype, so we had our fingers crossed that Skype would work down in Mississippi as well as it works in Sleepy Eye.
Actually, it might be a little bit better.
I think so. I think so, too. So, yeah. Sally, for those who weren't listening last week, is on vacation, but couldn't stay away from our hour conversation.
That's right. I'm anxious to share some good ideas about taking your technology on the road, and I've been getting some good experience the last week or so.
Yeah, as we were kind of brainstorming the show for this week, we thought, well, Sally's going to be living this topic about, and we knew Sally couldn't not take technology with her. So we thought, well, let's determine what you really pack when you're on the road, and you're going to be gone for 2 weeks total, 3 weeks total?
Two weeks
total. So let's talk a little bit about it when you are on the road, and this could be for pleasure or for business. What kind of things do you take to stay connected, whether it be to work, to play, whatever? So where do you want to start, Sally? What did you pack?
Well, I just had to laugh. Obviously, one of my first things was to pack my laptop, but I wasn't alone on this trip packing a laptop.
Uh-huh.
I have a husband with a laptop along, and now I have a son who has a laptop computer. And when we got here to Mississippi, both my sisters had their laptops as well. So we got this really funny photo of all five of us sitting around the kitchen table with our laptop computers. It was just, uh-huh, it's just a different world that we live in, for sure.
Yeah, notebooks are an incredibly central part of what we do at this point, because for me, it's got all the stuff I need to do work. If I didn't have a laptop, if I were chained to a desktop, I would probably not be very efficient in what I've been trying to do. So,
right. And for folks that travel a lot now, there's the smaller, more compact versions using the netbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin, I know you have one of those. Quite a bit different than lugging along what we used to refer to affectionately as a boat anchor,
right?
Laptop that weighed about 40 pounds and, really slowed you down as you're trying to get through the airport checkpoints and things like that. These
mm-hmm.
netbooks are lightweight. I don't have one of those, but even smaller than that, I relied pretty heavily on this trip on my iPod Touch.
Mm-hmm.
So an iPod, iPhone, smartphone, gives you that ability to check in on your email and to do some internet browsing, read your RSS feeds, that kind of thing. So basically some kind of a computing device that allows you to stay connected is pretty high on the list.
Yeah, I would think an iPhone or an iPod Touch, something like that, that has Wi-Fi access, and I would assume that most places at this point, you can find that somewhere, whether it be a coffee shop or a relative's home or wherever,
right,
you're going to be able to get online.
Just a little plug for the rest areas in the state of Iowa. Every single roadside rest area has wireless access.
So Iowa is connect is wired.
That's right. We crossed the border into Missouri, and I lost that, and I was just devastated.
Is that right?
So I like the wireless access. Of course, the hotels have it, and yeah, down here in the satellite office, we're wireless. So
that's right.
It's all good.
Tremendous. I was thinking, you know, when you were talking about the handhelds, the portables, it's just so much quicker if you're just looking for, you know, doing a little surfing, you know, seeing what the news is, checking email, those kinds of things, than opening up your laptop, booting it up, you know, which in some cases takes, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever. When you've got your handheld, it's right there.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Of course, you need to remember to bring along all the necessary wiring, and that can get to be quite a bit if you've got these different devices. You know, even an Ethernet cable, if by chance you happen upon a place where you can use a wired connection.
Yep. I always carry in my bag, and some people look at me a little bit oddly, I always carry a 20-foot Ethernet cable in my bag. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons for that is I will often be in hotels where the wireless is a little bit iffy, depending on what room you're in, because I think hotels in general are still just kind of figuring out how to wire the entire place for the number of guests that they have. So if you're on one of the fringe edges of their wireless coverage, you're kind of in trouble. But yeah. Most of them still have a wireless or a wired jack. So I find with 20 feet, I can get over to the bed or to the desk or wherever I need to get that stronger, you know, more stable connection. So that's I never go anywhere without my 20-footer.
And that reminds me a lot of my husband going to pastors' conferences and things. He never leaves without a fairly long extension cord and a power strip.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're at a conference and you're sitting at a table, it's nice to be able to plug in. Your laptop battery's probably not going to last the entire time that you need it to.
Yep.
And having a power strip gives you instant popularity with all the guys that are sitting around you, because they can all plug in too. So.
I've noticed those conferences that I've been to that don't provide wireless, it is a mad dash to the seats closest to the outlets, just for that reason, where they know their battery life is not going to extend as long as they need it to be. So that's a great idea. He could probably charge for that use of that too.
Yeah, there you go.
So. All right, what else is in the bag?
Well, I think for us, we have a family of five. It's not real feasible for us to travel by plane. So a trip to Mississippi is basically a two-day car drive. So we make sure we have power converters and things for the car. We even have one that plugs into our cigarette lighter that has a regular, and I'm not good at AC/DC kind of terminology, but it has a regular plug, so I can just plug in with my standard plug, not with a special charger or whatever, but I can plug in and power up my devices in the car on the go.
Yep.
So that's real helpful.
I've got a little converter myself that I always take with me if I'm going to be renting a car, especially, because I can charge different things up in there. But it's no bigger than the size of it's probably, 5 inches by 5 inches. It's really compact and really nice to have along. You can get cheap ones at Radio Shack or wherever just to do the trick, because you don't always have the right cigarette lighter converted especially for your laptop, if you want to do anything with your laptop in the car, charge it up, whatever. So power is important yet until we start getting these longer life batteries.
And probably not a bad idea to throw in a little 3-to-2-prong converter in your laptop bag, because you never know when you might encounter an outlet that is only a 2-prong outlet or whatever. And so, having that converter, I guess it would be 2-prong to 3-prong, whatever direction it is. So,
right.
So you can convert and be able to use that.
Yep. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I had to pack my headset this time, and being able to talk on our various cell phones or whatever might require a headset. If you want to have some personal listening, having your headset along, and obviously for Skype calls and things like that, you'll need a headset. So that's something you want to make sure that you include in your bag as well.
Absolutely. You had mentioned the netbook, and when I do take the netbook along for trips, it's fairly lightweight, but it also doesn't have all the bells and whistles that a regular notebook has. So as a result, you don't keep all of your data on it. And one way around that is to do a little cloud computing. So more and more, I'm trying to keep the stuff that I work with on a day-to-day basis somewhere in the cloud, whether it be on our intranet here at the Senate office or in a note-taking piece of software like Evernote, which we've talked about in the past. There's all kinds of ways to do that. I ran across a little device that might be of interest to some of our listeners called PogoPlug at PogoPlug.com. Basically, it's a powered plug-in router / USB device, which you can plug in an external hard drive to. So it essentially makes any drive you plug into this router at home available on the internet. So there's a web interface, and you map it. You can map it as a drive on your local machine, so that you just throw stuff in there, or it could be your main hard drive if you want it to be. And PogoPlug grabs it and creates a web interface with its username and password protected, so that and this works great for file sharing too, where you don't have to subscribe to some kind of service and post it there. It can, you know, all the files can still live in your office or in your home, wherever you're attaching this PogoPlug, but you always have access to it.
Even like on a smartphone kind of device, basically yep. Anything that can surf the web.
Yeah, there's an iPhone. I think there's an iPhone app for it that allows you to view that as well.
Wow, that's really cool stuff.
So you always have your files, and that's a big thing, especially when you're on a business trip where you need access to those assets and the ability to either download them or view them or forward them, whatever. You know, those are always important.
I'm feeling the stress in my stomach as you describe this, because, you know, as you prepare for vacation, it's pretty stressful because you're afraid you're going to forget something. And mm-hmm. just being able to, you know, plug in a drive and know that you can get access to whatever you need to get access to, and you don't have to stress out over what particular files you need to bring along or whatever, that sounds like a great solution.
Absolutely. So, Sally, when you went on vacation down there to Mississippi, did the thought ever cross your mind that you wanted to totally disconnect yourself from the digital world?
Can't say that it did.
But that's not to say that others wouldn't, right?
That's right. And, you know, being having a technical job, you know, it does, you do need some downtime from the keyboards and things like that. But yeah, I personally still wanted to stay somewhat connected. I use a out of office auto reply on my email so that people know I'm out of the office and I'm not mm-hmm. going to be responding to them right away. But I'm still logging in and just taking a quick peek to see if there's any emergency fires that need to be put out or whatever. Mm-hmm. And also just staying connected personally. This was right. The first vacation where I was actually using Twitter.
Oh, I enjoyed those, Sally. Thank you.
Yeah, send in text messages. I was using my cell phone on the road, tweeting along the way, and, you know,
very interesting.
It's fun to
I
do,
enjoyed that.
And just really neat to get all the feedback. One thing I did was I put out all the gas prices as we bought gas, you know, what the different gas mm-hmm. prices were along the way, and I got feedback from all over the country. Oh, our price is this, and our price is that, you know. It's just really neat to connect that way and to have a conversation around the things that we're doing. People were making recommendations. Oh, make sure you go here and do this. And,
yep.
you know, it really is a cool way to stay connected. And it just kind of brought home for me the power of that real-time communication. You know, normally we get in the car for a 2-day trip and nobody hears from us in those 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
But in this way, we were totally connected the whole time. So that was really cool.
Yeah, that is great. Yeah, I appreciate you doing that. And I could empathize on those rainy days, because usually it rains on our vacations too.
Yeah, we spent a day at the amusement park and it was rainy, but, you know, that makes for very short lines.
That does.
Waiting for rides and things like that. So there's
kids
pluses
don't mind,
and minuses
right?
to it all. That's right. We had a good time. So
cool.
A couple of other techie kind of devices you want to make sure you pack in your bag is camera/video camera.
Oh yeah,
mine does
absolutely.
Both.
Mm-hmm.
We made sure that we had our GPS, and you have to make sure you have the appropriate maps along.
Mm-hmm.
Different versions of GPS can handle different amounts of mapping loaded on them, or maybe on different memory cards or whatever. So just make sure you have the right maps along. For us, it's real important to have a lot of good audio to listen to. My family's really into books on tape and that kind of thing. So just some good audio goodness. Maybe you want to get a couple of back versions of the Wells Tech podcast to listen to on your trip, or whatever it might be. And one that I added, it's kind of funny, but on this trip we had to make sure and bring our Wii remotes. I don't know if you're a Wii person, but my family down here is, and we were able to load up our Miis on our Wii remotes. We'd never done that before, and bring them along so we could have some serious game competitions. We got some fancy bowlers down here in Mississippi, so we did some bowling, head-to-head competition. And, you know, it's just kind of odd how technology is really a part of our lives these days.
No kidding. Now, I've played the Wii, but I'm not a Wii person per se.
No.
My kids are. My son and my youngest daughter were playing just the other day. But that's interesting. And I hear more and more. We've got a number of people at church. A number of our teachers and pastors actually do online competitions. I think Mario Kart is the hot one right now, where they'll have a Mario Kart Monday. So at Monday night at, I don't know, 8 o'clock or something like that, four of them will be online and doing their, I think that's Wii, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Doing their Mario Kart thing on Monday night. Great social thing, even though you're separated, you know, you're not in the same place. So pretty cool.
Very fun. So,
all right. Thanks, Sally, for sharing what's in your bag. If any of our listeners have other thoughts, feedback is great. We'd love to hear what you take along, what you couldn't live without if you're on vacation or on a business trip or at a conference, whatever it is. Let us know what you carry. If we didn't mention it, we'd love to hear it. There's all kinds of mobile technologies out there that I think are making our lives a little bit easier when we're on the road and a little bit more comfortable, to help us stay connected. Wellstech.wells.net is the place to go to provide feedback. New technology showcase. Are we ready for that?
Yeah, I think we are. And this has been an exciting week. I go on vacation and all this cool stuff happens.
Yeah. We could have picked one of like four things that was breaking news and things that are really interesting and cool, but we're going to save a few of those. But the one we're going to talk about is a new search engine from Microsoft called
Bing.
Bing.
I love that name.
Do you?
Yeah, bada Bing.
I don't know. I'm still up in the air on the name, but the technology is actually pretty good. I don't know, Sally, if you've tried this much, but essentially it's a replacement for their live search or their MSN search. It all got converted to Bing, and they're I think they're kind of billing it more as a research center kind of concept as opposed to just a regular old search engine, and it's a little bit smarter than your typical search engine because it anticipates what you're looking for, and down the left-hand side of your search results are related searches that really seem to be pretty smart.
Yeah, it categorizes things so that when you put in a search term, you can zero in on certain components of that. So maybe it's a term that has real broad use across the internet. And I know I've looked at examples of searching on a celebrity name or something like that, and you can get to images or blog posts or you know, merchandise from that person or whatever, just real easily with these side categories that it provides.
Yep. I think it's a little more even-handed in its search results than Google, for instance, especially on the video side. When I was doing searches for Google videos, almost all the results were YouTube. And that's a Google property. So, and I guess that would make sense. If I did the same search on Bing, I got a more cross-section. I'd get Vimeo videos, I'd get YouTube, I'd get, you know, a whole host of different kinds of videos. So I think there may be a little bit more diverse in their search results. There have been some comparisons between Bing and Yahoo and Google and some of the major providers. And I think by and large, they're on pretty even footing. So that's the good news.
Right, and pretty easy to give it a try. One thing I like about it is that they cover their homepage with a really nice image each day, so you never know what you're going to see when you go there. And just a different flavor to it, but worth trying out. Take it for a spin.
Exactly. So Bing.com, pretty simple, and it's easily installed as the default search engine on almost any browser. There's instructions for that. Another nice thing, I'm just looking at the page again, is that it gives you your search history right in the left-hand column, so you can kind of go back and see your search history. You can do that through the other search engines, but it's not as right there as it is in Bing. So I think they did a nice job. I don't know if it'll overtake Google. Google's got such a stranglehold on the search industry, but I think it's certainly worth a try. And I suppose it depends on your search habits, what kinds of things you search for, whether it's going to be a good fit for you or not. But you will not know until you try, I suppose. And you probably have to try it for an extended period of time. It can't be, well, I'll just try a couple searches. You have to live with it, I would suggest, for maybe a few weeks or a month, and then make your decision. I think there's some potential there.
Yeah, somewhere I read a quote that said, Bing is to Google as Zune is to iPod. You know, kind of a late arrival in the arena, and probably a really good product, but maybe it won't get as much attention.
Yeah,
you know, as Google.
The Zune's getting some love lately too. They're coming out with a new Zune HD, so they're actually upping the ante a little bit on the iPod at this point. So that ought to be interesting. And I think in general, competition is always going to be good. So I always root for the underdog, if for no other reason than we need more competition. It can't be just the iPod.
Sure.
Then Apple would basically set the price tag, and typically that's a higher price tag than a lot of people want to pay.
So that's very true.
Keep it coming, Microsoft. Don't give up, especially in this consumer electronics space. And there's all kinds of other competitors too. So we'll keep the other new technology showcase candidates in the back wings until another show. There's all kinds of stuff from Google, and there was a big news conference from Apple with some iPhone stuff. So we'll talk about that in later shows. So stay tuned for that. Sally, were you able to come up with a pick in your 2 weeks of leisure?
Following along on our vacation theme today, yes, I was.
Okay.
I wanted to point our listeners to geocaching.com. I think I maybe talked about this last summer about the same time, but geocaching.com, if you're not familiar with it, is a website where you can load up on hidden treasures, or at least coordinates for hidden treasures that you can search out in your travels throughout the land and actually throughout the world. They're hidden everywhere. So basically, using the technology of a global positioning system, people hide typically Tupperware containers in the woods, and they're full of trinkets and a logbook. And you
it's not always the woods, is it?
That's true. Sometimes they're in Walmart parking lots. You just never know. But yes. They're all over. There's
speaking of that, about 3 years ago, maybe it was. We did kind of a rest stop thing. Because there's usually geocaches someplace in some kind of rest stop. So we actually changed our routes to hit a couple of the rest stops that had those. So
stop. And if you have an iPhone now, you can actually get an iPhone app that allows you to basically get all the coordinates and descriptions and hints and logs and things from the geocaching website.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Really easy to take the entire website along with you, and as you're driving along, be able to zero in and find geocaches on your travels and things.
Mm-hmm.
Neat activities around a church or school would be to use it for youth group activities. This summer we're going to have a church picnic out at our state park, and we're actually going to hide some geocaches and do some geocaching in relation to our church picnic, and also just actually introducing your students to it. There's tons of resources out on the web for using geocaching in education. There's lots of math skills to be learned and mapping and things like that that you can make use of in an education setting.
It's science, right?
That's right. And just a really neat way to introduce kids to latitude and longitude measurements and things like that. I'm going to be doing it this summer with our computer camp that we're having at our school. So looking forward to that. There's lots of neat twists on geocaching. Some of them are hidden and they involve solving puzzles and things like that. Minnesota State Parks are doing geocaching for the second time this summer with a whole series. In all 72 of the state parks, there's a geocache. And this year, they're calling it their wildlife safari. So you can actually learn about different animals that are native to the different parks. As you find the geocaches, there's kind of trading cards that are in each geocache that you can pick up and collect a whole series of wildlife information. And you can trade them in after you've earned 10 or 12 of them. You can get badges and things like that. So just a lot of creative uses of geocaching. And with the new iPhone app, super easy to take along with you in your pocket and pull it out and make use of it. And I guess ultimately the new iPhone that's coming out is going to have even a GPS compass on it. So that feature will make finding hidden geocaches with your GPS on your iPhone a lot easier. So
yep, for sure.
Lots of fun stuff there.
Cool. You mentioned a computer camp. Tell me a little bit more about that. Is that just for students of the school or Sunday school, or is it open to the community? Are you using it as an outreach tool? What's going on with that?
Well, this year is our first year to try that, so we are limiting it to our congregation, our school, or congregation members. Uh-huh. But the idea would be to use it as an outreach tool.
I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, and we're actually doing two flavors. I'm doing a week-long camp for the kids. It's 2.5 hours each day, Monday through Friday. And then I'm doing a Tuesday night adult ed. Right. And I've actually had a lot more interest in the adult class than I have in the kids class. The kids see me all year long. So,
right.
And they're busy with various activities. So I've got a pretty good group for the kids camp, but the adult class is kind of filling up and brimming over the edges and stuff. And we're going to do a lot of different topics as well. So looking forward to a fun summer of technology.
Great idea.
Yeah.
Blessings on that.
Thanks.
All right. My pick is Google-centric. I've been playing around a lot with some Google technologies, doing a little bit of coding, actually, and creating some gadgets and such, just to kind of test out some of the recent announcements and some of the development tools that have come out, because I think there's some application for church usage and intranets and those kinds of things. But I got back into the habit of using iGoogle as a result. And iGoogle is basically your homepage. And on it, you can place all of these, what Google calls gadgets. One can be your email, one can be your calendar, one can be your documents, one can be your Google Reader, which I read on a regular basis to kind of stay up on the technology that's coming down the pike. But it's become my homepage. And a couple weeks ago, I recommended Chrome, and so now I load Chrome with iGoogle. A nice fit. You can throw your sports scores on there, the weather. There's thousands and thousands of these Google gadgets. Just last weekend, I created a little simple app called a Tea Timer. So I love tea. And there's all kinds of timers out there, but I thought I'll just throw something together that'll be a gadget on my homepage where I'm steeping my tea and it needs to sit for, this kind of tea needs 2 minutes and this kind of tea needs 6 minutes or whatever. So just created one of those. So there's all kinds of those kinds of little things out there for any kind of interest. I'm sure there's some geotagging or geocaching kinds of gadgets. There's all kinds of stuff out there. So, and it's getting smarter and smarter, so they know where you live, or kind of know your location, so they can kind of custom tailor some of the results to that and the gadgets to that. But iGoogle, and it's really simple. You can just go to iGoogle.com, or I think it's google.com/IG, and you just log in with your Google account, and you can set that up. You can have different themes. You can move these widgets or gadgets around to suit the screen real estate that you have. All kinds of stuff you can do.
I'm smiling, Martin. That's a good pick. I guess probably for us techies that listen to the Wells Tech podcast, one of the joys that we get is supporting our family and friends and their technology needs, because mm-hmm. you can't take a vacation without cleaning up mom and dad's computers That's for right. them and stuff. And I just got done setting up an iGoogle homepage for my dad. And,
Sweet.
And it did exactly what you said. It knew where he was. It brought up the local newspaper
yep.
As a default gadget for him, and, you know, the local weather and that kind of thing. And then we customized and mm-hmm. brought in his Gmail and all those kind of things to be part of the page. And you can actually have multiple pages. They call
yep.
them tabs.
Right.
They're off to the side. So you can put your news on one and your technology. As a matter of fact, I added a technology tab for him, and it said, can we propagate it for you? You know,
mm-hmm.
can we fill it in with some of
right.
our favorite picks? And so I didn't even have to go and look for technology feeds or whatever. It kind of filled them in with Engadget and Wired and different ones that are popular right there for them. So
mm-hmm.
Super simple to set up, and just a really pleasant way to be connected to all the things that are available to you out on the web.
Yep, absolutely. So it's free, of course. It is Google. So if you're kind of sick of Google, this is probably not the pick for you. But Google does make our lives easier, so give it a shot.
There you go.
Community feedback. We heard from a number of folks last week based on our topic of backups. So who's talking to us about their backup stuff?
That's right, Martin. We heard from Perry Lund, who's down in Iowa, where all the free wireless hotspots are at the roadside. And Perry wrote to us just talking about various experience he's had with backup solutions working in the technology field. And a couple that he recommended, one's called CrashPlan, and it uses Java as an engine and works on all the different popular operating systems, Mac, Linux, and Windows. And they use it on about 15 clients, and they just love it. He says they have a server with Drobo. And a secondary backup site, so CrashPlan can back up between the two sites for their clients.
Mm-hmm.
So just really very positive feedbacks about CrashPlan.
Yep. Yeah, it sounds like something that schools should really look into.
Yeah. The other one that he recommended is one that you and Rob actually talked about last week, SuperDuper.
SuperDuper, yes.
Yep. He had real positive things to say about that as well, but I guess that one is for Mac server environments only.
Mac only, and there is a cost to it. So it's not super expensive, but it does. The trick with backup technology is you shouldn't know that it's there. You just set it once, and it just works, and that's kind of the way SuperDuper is. I installed it probably 2 years ago, and I haven't paid attention to it since. Only when I need to restore something do I go back and grab that, so... It's well
good
done.
Stuff. Very good. We also heard from Jason Schmidt. He gave us a Pound Wells Tech Twitter message that pointed us to iOmega's, I think it's called the Ego Drive. The Ego Drive is basically a strong USB drive. I say strong. It's got an aluminum casing. It's very... very good for travel and that kind of thing. It's able to be knocked around a little bit.
Right.
It's not going to crash on you. And just looking at their website, they advertise a couple 250 gig to 500 gig models in the $85 to $135 price range. So that's the portable Ego from iOmega if you're looking for a USB drive.
Yeah, if you want a half a gig or half a terabyte in your pocket, Ego is probably the way to go.
There you go. And then finally, we heard from Jeremy Johnson, and he was just really excited about Gparted. He left us a comment website, wellstech.wells.net, and told us all about Gparted, which is basically for partitioning drives. But he also uses it in regard to backing up as well. And maybe you are more familiar with some of the technical things that Jeremy was talking about there. But
mm-hmm.
I did find more links, information about it on Wikipedia, and also a place to download it for free from sourceforge.net.
Yep.
So,
partitioning
comments
is
out on the website.
Yeah, awesome. Partitioning is such a pain in the neck and kind of a dangerous activity. So it's good to have really solid tools when you're doing any kind of partitioning or repartitioning. And that's what Gparted does real well. I've not used it, but I'm going to try it. And essentially you're sizing your disk, and it's usually a good idea to do some disk partitioning, and we could probably have a show on this, to separate your applications from your data. And there's a number of reasons for that. One of them is for performance, so that you're not mangling your application data with your day-to-day data, or your application programs with your day-to-day data. And it makes it easier for backup, it makes it easier for security, all kinds of things that you would maybe want to think about when you're thinking about partitioning a disk. And this makes it real easy, apparently. So thank you, Jeremy. Appreciate that.
Yeah. So moving on from the backup topic, then we heard from Pastor Dan Witte, who's down at Risen Savior in Lakewood Ranch, Florida. And he sent along some information that he had put together, I believe, for a pastor's conference.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing a presentation about basically using online resources to do language study, to
yep.
study God's Word in the original languages. And he put together a wonderful resource page, did it out on the Risen Savior website, which is a final website,
mm-hmm.
so a really neat use of a final website to pull together all these unique resources for studying God's Word. And
yep.
so I wanted to include a link for that.
He's got Greek references, New Testament in Greek, Hebrew, New Testament variants, Lebronics, online lexicons, diagramming, all kinds of stuff that those of you that are pining for the days of seminary study, this would be a place. But I guess it's not just for pastors, too. I think there's stuff here that I think the average pew sitter could grab a hold of and actually use some of these tools to get a little bit deeper into some of these original languages. So very cool stuff. Thanks, Dan, for sharing that.
Yep. Next up, we heard from Christopher Hens, who was actually putting a question out to us, and one we hope we'll be able to address in a future show.
Mm-hmm.
He writes, it's summertime, and he's a teacher, so time to do things that you don't have time to get to during the school year. And one of the things on his radar is updating their curriculum. And he was basically contacting us to find out if there was curriculum mapping software recommendations
mm-hmm.
or even options that have a good Wells Tech free price tag to them
right.
That he could make use of in that process.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the short answer is, yeah, there absolutely is. There's one through our CPS, our parish schools office. There's a curriculum mapper subscription to that I don't believe is free. But that would be one. And we're efforting to try and find somebody from that particular product line to come on the show and talk to us a little bit more about curriculum mapping. Maybe that would be a great topic to come up with for our show when Gail is on classroom technologies, and where we have
right.
a higher teacher audience. Christopher also cautioned us on who we invite as guests on the show, too, didn't he, Sally?
That's right. Apparently, he's got some relation to Pastor Mike Hens, who was a recent interview and works in our evangelism office.
That's right.
It's
his son,
so,
I think.
Right.
All right.
So,
and we have one more, I think, right?
That's right. Another tweet from Jason Schmidt, who pointed us to Creaza, which is a website for kids' productivity, he called it. It has mind mapping. They can create video and other cartoon-type resources on the Creaza website. Looks like a really innovative way to engage students and have them using their creative skills and also organizing their thoughts to use these creative skills. So it helps them put the projects together, not just giving them the tools to do it, but actually getting organized and prepared to put their projects out there. So I'm going to be checking that out. I haven't had time to dig very deep, but it looks really interesting.
Sally, aren't our listeners awesome?
Yeah, I love it when we hear from them, for sure.
Oh, man. And to give us that feedback and to make the show a little bit better, a lot better, in fact, I think this is one of the areas of the show that I really look forward to, because our listeners are so smart, and they've explored different things in different contexts. So I think there's some greater value for our wider audience when they get involved. And to do that, wellstech.wells.net. You can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. We're on Facebook, Twitter, blah, blah, blah. lots of ways to get to us. So please do consider contributing to the show. Or if you don't have a contribution, ask a question. Tell us, you know, you guys haven't talked about this in a while. You've never talked about this. I'd love to hear more information about that. So that would be a great way to do that. We'd love to hear from you. Next week, Sally, is going to be a continuation of our ongoing study of Clay Shirky's book, Here Comes Everybody. This will be Chapter 8. I think we've got our numbers and our chapter titles right this week, right?
we've been challenged
with that in the past. So I think we are 99% confident that it'll be Chapter 8, which is Solving Social Dilemmas. And in that chapter, Clay begins to talk about or explore the concept of the difficulty people are consistently having now of getting together and how technology is helping that. So how do you do meetups and those kinds of things using quick kinds of meetings? And obviously Twitter is going to be a part of that conversation and a few other technologies that are really coming to the fore as far as helping us get together. Anything else, Sally, from Mississippi? Do you have any of those pickles?
You bet I did. First thing, we had fried pickles, and I got a kick last night. I heard my dad, he went to his bedroom to get ready for bed, and he turned on Through My Bible. So my dad was listening to your father-in-law, does the recordings of Through My Bible, and
that's right.
I just got a real kick out of that. That's the way he ends his day each day. So.
Sweet. And that's the way I start my day. So
Okay. Take
advantage of those resources, everybody. All right, let's close the show as we always do with music from one of our talented Wells musicians. This is the In His Service group. They're going to be playing Lost in the Night from their album In His Time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.